The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week 2019 title sponsor, Techstars. At the core, Techstars is a company founded by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. With more than 300,000 alumni and 10,000 mentors across 150 countries, Techstars is a worldwide network that helps entrepreneurs succeed. To learn more, go to techstars.com. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. This is one of 20 interviews recorded in a pop-up backroom studio at Dojo 4 during the 10th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Our guest for episode 38 is Kristen Darga, founder of Impact Founder, a multimedia conversation sharing real successes and failures of global entrepreneurs. Kristen and I get into a number of topics, including why entrepreneurs, even the successful ones, are three times as likely to suffer from depression as the average person, the personal experience that led Kristen to create Impact Founder, how primitive human archetypes still contribute to our actions today, and how Impact Founder serves as a bridge linking capitalism with art. All of that and more as the Boulder Tech Podcast speaks with Impact Founder's Kristen Darga. I saw a statistic on your website that said that 30% of entrepreneurs report suffering from depression in their lifetime, and that's double the percentage reporting depression among non-entrepreneurs. What makes founders twice as likely to suffer from depression?
Well, I'm not an expert on what makes them more likely, but I can speak to the fact that, I mean, I'm sure you understand this too, that entrepreneurs are, that's a high-risk environment. You put everything on the line for what you believe in or what you want to build. It's very passion-driven, and a lot of times people are facing failure at, I guess I would probably say, three times the rate of the general population. So I think that high risk with not always high reward, definitely not immediate reward, is something that would do that.
But you also, you've worked with a lot of founders who are actually experiencing great success and yet still suffering from depression.
Yeah, there's actually a really great part of my book that addresses that. That has to do with our mind, not to get too deep too fast, but our minds are set up to protect us from dying. We're here today because the human race survived long enough for us to sit at this table and talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So those moments when we're successful, our mind can kind of click right in to that, you must survive, this is scary. There may be a fear there underneath that's making you nervous of maybe obviously failing, but let's say disappointment or inability to provide what you promise, trust. Any of those underlying issues we have as human beings are just amplified at those times. We think that from the outside, when we see someone who's successful, that they are free of doubt. That's one of the reasons why I think people want to be successful, is because they think they'll be free of that self-doubt. You're not free of that doubt in that moment. You still have it.
More money, more problems.
More money, more problems.
So mental health seems to be kind of a hot topic these days.
Yeah.
And it seems to be more and more widespread. Do you think that there actually is more mental illness than in the past? And if so, why?
I don't think there's more than the past. I think the way that we receive information is very different. We have more opportunities for people to say something about it, whereas in the past, we'd have reporters giving information. It's more of an open, free space to speak. Again, I'm not an expert on mental health. I have a company that sort of specializes in that area, and we can talk about that too. It's not specific to mental health. That's just why I started it. from my experience with what I do, I'd say that the flip side to what I just said is that whereas we have an open forum to say stuff, we also have a false sense of connection. I think because of that false sense of connection, we are more disconnected from human interaction than we ever have been in the past, where we think we're connected. So that human need for that sort of survival group mentality, we think we have it, but it's not real. Like we have this, like you and I have texted before. We've never met, you know, and I like walk in and I mention that and it's context. It's not connection though. We never had connected before now.
Right.
So that was a false connection. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So kind of technology is breeding this illusion of connection.
Yeah, I know, I'm not sure it's an illusion. Mm-hmm. It's just not that deep connection with another human.
Yeah, it's a different kind of connection.
Right. In fact, so many times I'm thankful for social media because I've connected with people I never would have connected with before. So it's created an opportunity. But I think where we are right now in society and why we're seeing so much around mental health is because we have a new generation growing up with that being part of how they receive connection. Mm-hmm. And there's a gap, that one-on-one, that personal, vulnerable connection with a friend that you share, it's not there as much as it was in the past because we think we can fill that void with that connection through social media when we can't.
Right. And reading about what you do, the thing that popped into my mind was, and it's something that I've thought about a lot over the last several years, is this technological society that we're creating. We as human beings have not really adapted to that yet. And that's maybe why there's an increase in depression and why mental health is such a big topic these days.
Right. Well, and the human brain is adapting to it. Mm-hmm. There's a book that addresses how we have this dopamine response every time we check in with our phones, right? Mm-hmm. Well, according to this book, it takes a minute for our brain to recalibrate after we check in with technology. So, you know, just consider that. We have our phone next to us. We're using our computer. Maybe there's something else going on too. We're at our computer, focused on one task, and we're pulled away by our phone. We need a minute to recalibrate from that, and then we go back to technology on our computer. So it's changing the way our brain works. When you're reading a book without distractions, your brain is working in a completely different manner. So we're starting to program the brain differently through technology, mm-hmm. without realizing what it's really doing and what the long-lasting effects are.
And so in your work with these founders, you do coaching to address these issues and this issue of sort of founder depression. Would that be a way to characterize it?
Yeah. I mean, our mission at the end of the day is to reduce those feelings of isolation, depression, fears of failure. We do it through having coaches. So we have a team of coaches, myself plus a couple others, and they handle sort of those thoughts that we addressed earlier about even when we are successful, what are those feelings of self-doubt or, you know, self-sabotage or fear that may come up. We also have the media side of the company where we address the challenges that people face to normalize the conversation. It's crazy because I think in 2015 was when I launched Impact Founder, and I launched it at Denver Startup Week. And a sponsor requested that they remove our exhibit from the location that they had planned us to be in because they were trying to celebrate entrepreneurship, not talk about depressing things. So from 2015 to now, that conversation of mental health has become way more prevalent. It was definitely under the rug even then. And that's just a couple of years. So the whole purpose that, you know, I had behind launching Impact Founder was to be able to kind of out the conversation, not about mental health specifically, but about the human experience. and create a connection there, create relief for people by telling their stories and by reading other people's stories to realize that they're not alone. So I help people through those two ways, entrepreneurs.
And what are some specific strategies that you might use or some specific advice that you would dispense to help people address these issues?
Through years of coaching and hundreds of stories, I have come up with four areas that I found are the areas that help entrepreneurs overcome obstacles. One is community. That's first and foremost. What's one reason why I'm here this week? You know, and who are you surrounding yourself with? It's not just having community. It's, are they supportive? Do they understand what it's like? You know, find people who are like you, who push the envelope a little, if you will, and understand what it's like to take a huge risk, to have a business you've built for 8 years and then think you may actually go bankrupt. I mean, there's so many different things that can happen in a business. To have people that understand that in your community is really important. So that's one. The other thing that I've found is perception, you know, sort of how you think of your circumstances. I believe that what you think becomes your reality. Mm-hmm. That's like, you know, The Secret from, I don't even know what year that book was. It's terrible and amazing at the same time. Right. It really is. Have you read it?
No.
Mm-hmm. That's like the last book that I recommend to clients. But it is. It really is like what you think becomes your reality.
Yes.
This morning I was late. Mm-hmm. When I woke up, I thought, I'm totally going to be late. There's no way I'm going to make it there. And then I was late. I mean, 10 minutes is not very long.
No.
But I kept thinking I'm going to be late. Mm-hmm. How am I going to get all this stuff done this morning? And I showed up late. So I think sometimes what you think you create. So perception. How do you think about your challenges? Do you learn from them? Mm-hmm. Or do you like suffer underneath them?
Do you think that there's a part of the way that we are sort of, I guess, expected to live our lives today that we put our shiniest face on and I'm going to do a great job, I'm going to be on time, and when that doesn't happen, it creates an elevated level of unhappiness or
suffering
or something like that.
Stress.
When really... Ultimately, I mean, sometimes, yeah, you really do need to be on time. But ultimately, you know, 10 minutes is not that big a deal. And if you're not feeling great today, that's okay too. But that there are these sort of, put a happy face on everything element to how things are today that puts this pressure on people to feel good even when they're not, when it's perfectly human to not feel good. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. There's a lot of different pieces that I picked up in that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I just believe in communication. So the second I knew I was going to be 10 minutes late, I communicated it, mm-hmm. right? And I really thought when I said yes, I could be here. you know, I think with communication, you create freedom. So in that sense, absolutely. This is another thing, you know, behind what I do. People are communicating what's going on. They experience freedom after they say it. Even if it's not happening right in that moment, it was in the past, it still feels great. There's another part of what you said that, do you think we put our shiny faces on? I think a little bit like primally, our society operates in a masculine way, which if you think about hunting, if you will, mm-hmm. if you think about hunting, you're all going out there separately. You're not doing it together. You don't really want to let other people know where to find dinner. So you're doing it on your own. You're bright and shiny. You got it covered. You can't let people in on the secret. So I think we operate a lot like that. If someone knows, they're going to know. And if they know, I'm never going to make it. That goes pretty far in, but I would consider that that's how we operate. And so the vulnerability, that sharing, that connection is very feminine. So it's that balance between the two, which obviously we want to have every day in different ways, right? There's mm-hmm. man is not just masculine, woman is not just feminine, but how those, the combination of both of those. So that would be operating in the masculine way, not telling people what's happening. Yeah.
And so I guess what I was getting at is that you know, we feel like we need to put our shiny face on, yeah. or everything's going perfect and I'm great, as if that's some sort of projection of our strength.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When intuitively, to me, it feels more like strength to admit, you know what, I'm having a crappy day.
That's right. It does.
But we're not at a point yet societally, I think, where it's okay. It may be becoming more okay, but where it's not really okay to just be like, you know what, I had a crappy day, or I screwed that up and I need to start over. And I can see how that's a big problem for somebody who's starting a company, because it could be the life or death of that company. But in general, though, that's just sort of what feels most natural to me, I guess, is just to express that vulnerability is actually a show of strength.
Absolutely. And I think that goes back to community. Is your community receptive of that? If not, find new people.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's really what's going to help you succeed, is the ability to be able to say, man, I like had a terrible day. I lost the funding I thought I was going to get, or I lost this client that's like 5K in recurring revenue. I mean, that's a significant thing that happens. So to be able to say it to somebody that you trust in your community, it's a part of survival that we don't inherently think we should do. Mm-hmm. We need to look like we're doing okay.
Right.
Yeah.
In a commercial capital intensive world, what role can art play?
That's a great question. I would love to get some big thinkers in the room on that with me. I found that starting a company that was photography based, I studied journalism in college years ago. I've always thought images were super powerful. They connect people with other people without saying words. So just start with that. So art plays a role in that connection. That's a problem that I think I faced when I started Impact Founder. Part of what we do is art-based. The photography, we have photo stories with quotes on them. Well, it started out as a project. I had no idea what it was going to be. It was an idea. 7 weeks later, I executed it. I had 32 photos in an exhibit. It was a very fast-built project. I didn't think it was going to be a business. And it had immediately gained traction. So we had about 7,000 people come through the exhibit during Denver Startup Week. Now we know it's a big event. There's about 10,000 people that year. Still a pretty solid number. And then after the fact, I had to figure out what this was. You know, it's photography based. What value does it bring? Is it a business? And I ended up settling on that it's a business. And in the beginning, the questions that would come to me about how art is a business was really interesting. So it is behind that question. I don't know if I know the answer to that, what role it plays. I mean, clearly here it plays the role of community, connection, creation, and I would probably say economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's clearly supporting people who are growing the economy. So what role does it play? I mean, I'd say that. Specifically to what I'm doing. However, the bigger question, don't have the answer to that.
You brought in a copy of Impact Founder, your book, which is mm-hmm. coming out.
It's already out on Amazon. Mm-hmm. You can find it there.
And it's called Impact Founder, Inspirational Stories of Entrepreneurs Who Risk Everything for What They Believe In. And it's a beautiful book, and there is some great pictures. Did you take all these photos?
I did not. I took some, and not all of them. I have a team of people that work with me. So we have photographers, video producers, people who edit our audio. So some of these were others. Some of them were myself.
And so most of these photos are of founders, and there's a quote overlaid on the photo where they're basically saying things are going great and things are going terrible at
sure.
the same time.
Exactly. It's just what's going on. So it's a success and a challenge. And we're normalizing the fact that they both happen. And we actually created it through specific language. We use "and" as a connector. Because when people say, "I really like you, but," you kind of want to punch them in the face.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, "You don't like me." Because all you can hear is "but." Mm-hmm. What's wrong with me? So we use "and" strategically placed in our statements between the success and the challenge to normalize it, to create an even playing field. The book has most of them structured with success first, challenge later. We don't limit people to that. That just happened to be how it went. Some of them have a success in there. One of my favorites is, I started my business to save my marriage ended up filing for divorce and my clients tripled. I don't recommend that one, but it's one of my favorites just because it makes people chuckle a little, like, oh, shoot. Well, there you go. And then the other one is we're hitting our revenue targets and I'm driving my daughter's car to stay afloat. They're just very real statements.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they show a bit of that vulnerability as well as the success. And it makes them more human.
Absolutely. And I think touching back to what you said earlier, I think that vulnerability creates a connection that makes people see you as a leader. Even through what we're building here, I mean, people see me differently than they did 5 years ago. People who participate in Impact Founder have their own sense of leadership that way because they're being pretty vulnerable. It's like, if I'm going to choose a mentor, I'm going to choose someone who I can be real with. So here's hundreds of stories of people you can reach out to that you know will be real with you. I mean, it's pretty awesome when you think about that, right? They're creating like leaders everywhere. And that ability to be able to share.
What has the response been to Impact Founder? Did it take much to elicit responses from founders in need of the kind of help you offer?
No. If someone resonates, they're there. If they don't, they're not. Sometimes during Boulder and Denver Startup Week, when we're doing our free events and we're not intentionally producing stories for people, we do get some people who come in and go, oh, I didn't know this is what this was. And that's okay. And we don't have to tell their story. There's nothing wrong with them. We're not mad at them. It's just they're not ready for that. And, you know, usually we tell people to tell stories that are from the past, not happening right now, because that can be really tough if you're raising money. It can be pretty tough too on yourself emotionally. You don't necessarily want to air your laundry when it's happening all the time. Some people will do that, and that's okay too. But we've been received pretty well. Again, the only thing that had people question it was that art and capitalism question.
Right. Have most of the founders you work with, or are most of them from the Boulder and Denver, the Front Range tech community?
Yep. So far this year, so I'm also a speaker. So this year I'm able to present it to more audiences and grow that, which is wonderful.
And are founders, in your experience, in terms of depression anyway, mm-hmm. Are they equally depressed across all tech hotspots, or is, for example, Silicon Valley better or worse than, say, Boulder in terms of founder depression?
I'm like trying not to get in trouble with this answer. So I would say the community that we have between Boulder and Denver, what we do is done really well in a way that's incredibly supportive to entrepreneurs. I would like to think I had a part in that. You know, I started Impact Founder after three deaths of entrepreneurs. One was in New York City, one was in Silicon Valley, and the other was in Florida. Two died by suicide and one died in his sleep. So just different types of stress in the body, right? There have been a lot of conversations about this in Silicon Valley lately. I don't know what they're doing about it, but it seems like they're taking some initiatives. From my experience in communicating with folks in Silicon Valley about what we're doing, some people resonate and some people don't. However, at that point, I didn't see a lot going on there. From what I've seen, it's more big name productions, which is great because it's a farther reach, but I just don't know what they're doing internally.
How do you see Impact Founder fitting in just in general with the startup and tech community here on the Front Range? Do you consider yourself like an active part of it?
Yes.
Do you just show up for Startup Week or?
Active part of it. I mean, personally, I've pulled back a little bit in my participating in everything because I'm just human and I can't. However, we're very active throughout the year. So I consider Impact Founder part of it. I consider myself part of it. Sometimes I get the question from people who want to participate. They're like, oh, well, I'm not a tech founder. Can I still say, like, be a part of this? I'm like, absolutely. We don't discriminate. But I don't think of that separation ever. So, yes, I'm part of it, right?
And I'm curious, you mentioned the recent deaths of founders.
Mm-hmm.
You also mention on your website that you have a very direct experience with this. Mm-hmm. You had a boyfriend who is a founder and he was very depressed and talking about suicide. Mm-hmm. You called the suicide hotline and he's still alive. His mm-hmm. business is doing well. And so it sounds like things got back on the right track there.
Right.
Yes. But was that your first peek into this situation? What were you doing before you founded Impact Founder?
Sure. This is my fourth business. So it wasn't my first experience with like what we'll just call the highs and lows of entrepreneurship. It was my first experience with someone considering to take their life by suicide. So it was pretty impactful. I didn't really think about launching it until a year later. But, you know, through having my own businesses for years, you know, the first two weren't necessarily anything to write home about. They were, you know, sort of my training wheels. But they definitely had different times of highs and lows.
So you can relate to a lot of
probably right now too. Yeah. I mean, come on, let's be real. Like, yeah, right now.
Right now.
I mean, there's always stuff happening. I mean, again, it's a human experience on steroids. There's actually a really interesting, we have like 30%, right? We said, well, 72% of entrepreneurs self-report a mental health concern. 30% is around depression specifically, mm-hmm. but 72% experience a mental health concern. And that's self-reported.
What would be an example of that other than depression?
ADHD, bipolar, depression, suicidal thoughts. There's more I'm forgetting that starts to cover it.
And again, and this is coming, do you think a lot of this is societal or directly related to the pressure that they're feeling from what they're doing with their...
All of the above. And there's actually that research study was done out of UC Berkeley. And they started the study because they wanted to prove that entrepreneurs were touched with fire, that they already had some sort of difference in their mental capacity or the way they think that prompted them to be an entrepreneur, which means that, you know, they have a mental health condition. They didn't prove that. I mean, they're still doing some research on different things around it because they really do believe that entrepreneurs are different. Mm-hmm. So I think it's definitely a little bit of both.
So if you're a
I've always been different. I've never been someone who's enjoyed having a full-time job. I've done it. There's some that I thrived in, mm-hmm. you know, specifically the ones that let me be autonomous and work like I was doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. I've never flourished in an environment where I had a job per se. And one job, which is really funny, one of my first jobs, I worked for the Chamber of Commerce, and I won't tell you where, but the woman who was a COO took me into her office one day and said, I'm going to need you to keep your head down and do your job. And I said, okay, am I not doing my job? She said, no, but you need to focus on that. And I was like, well, I'm always going to be curious. I want to know what this person's doing and why they love it. Maybe I'm going to do that one day. It was always someone who was looking at other areas just to learn and experience and question and grow. And so that receptionist job at the Chamber of Commerce was never going to last. I knew that, but she wanted to hold me back from that curiosity. Mm-hmm. It's just, I've always been that way.
So now you've found your place, it seems, with Impact yeah. Founder. What are your short, medium, long-term goals for the company? Short term,
oh, man.
What are you hoping to accomplish this week during Boulder Startup Week? And then beyond
this week that? Is all about fun for me. You know, I get to interact with a high volume of founders that are all very different. We do two free events a year right now. We're looking to do more free events. However, we need to be compensated through partnership, right? So there's just some way to look at that. It's fun for me to interact with the community this way. You know, the other parts of the business operate like a media company. We have advertisements. People can actually pay us to feature them, write their story in a way that's different, that connects with people in a very different way. And with that, then we can place articles into publications we have contributor agreements with. So we can place stories for people. So that's another thing that we do. And we've launched that in the last 6 months. So that's what's happening now. We're not doing much more. We're just maintaining and growing that area. We have coaching. We're launching group coaching. One of the things that I always thought was really important when I started Impact Founder was that we offer the ability for people to hire a coach if they prefer a coach through us at a rate that would work for anyone. So we have everything from $250 a month to $1,500 a month. It just depends upon what level of business that you're at and what kind of support that you need and what you're willing to do. That's something that is growing. So we're launching the group coaching program here June 4th, which is really fun. And let's see, what else are we doing? I don't know. You know, obviously at this point with speaking, it's growing it into different networks. That's really important. I never launched Impact Founder because it was going to be a Boulder, Denver thing. We have a community that allowed that to grow, which is, I get the chill. Like, I just got the chills just saying that. It's really special. So moving into different areas, New York City, Austin, there's a couple of areas that I'm targeting to bring Impact Founder to the message and create some stories.
And can you give us any big success stories you want to
share? Of my own?
Of Impact Founder, of your own?
When I talk about starting it to now, when I started it, I was a coach. I was working with founders. I didn't need another business. I was doing fine. It was easy and good and fun. It's definitely been, you know, almost 4 years of a pretty solid climb. To me, the success at this stage is going back to that question about capitalism and art and what we call content these days. It's art. Yeah, it's beautiful, actually. We're surrounded by beautiful art and terrible art all the time. Mm-hmm. Creating a business that allows that to be seen for what it is, for value. I'm proud of that. I'm not sure I'm totally there yet. I'm not sure what there yet looks like, but I'm proud of that. I think that's something today that takes a different way of thinking about things and letting others see it that way. I don't know if I was prepared for it, but I'm proud of that. You know, it's something that I had no idea I would ever do. If you told me I would be doing this like 7 years ago, I would probably be like, well, maybe. And it's not my space. Art is not in my like repertoire. Not that I'm not creative. I can take pictures. I just never thought art would be somewhere that I would be. So I'm proud of that. It's definitely been, I think, the most challenging aspect to growing this business.
You know, I like to try to find the art in everything because it is... You know, you created something, whether it's a hardcore business thing, you still created it, and that required some artfulness. And so I think any effort that's being made to really overtly connect the two is something that serves all of us. So it's great to see that. Is there anything you'd like to add? Anything you're like, why didn't he ask me that?
No, your questions were amazing. As far as I'm concerned with what this is doing, it gets to reach more people, just like we were talking about before. I'm in and out of Boulder. I'm not in Boulder all the time. I spent a lot of time here a couple years ago, and I've since not been here a lot lately. And, you know, again, the more people we're able to reach with this message about how feeling like crap some days is okay. Mm-hmm. It's actually totally okay. I mean, there's a whole positivity movement and everything. It's okay. It's just fine. And just find the tools that you need to bring yourself out of it. If that's the only thing that I could leave at the end of this podcast, I think that would be it. You know, the tools that you know you need, whether it's go for a walk, talk to a friend, I don't know, mountain bike, whatever your thing is, it's okay to feel that way. Just know how to get yourself, move yourself past it and through it.
And maybe the most basic and essential tool is just the ability to reach out and ask for that help.
Absolutely. I'm totally accessible too, by the way. I'm one of those people that I'm accessible to people reaching out. So that's always something that people are welcome to do.
What's the best way for people to reach you?
This is an easy one. It's impactfounderproject@gmail.com.
Kristen Darga from Impact Founder. Thank you very much.
Thank you for those awesome questions.
That was Kristen Darga, founder of Impact Founder. Learn more at impactfounder.com and follow Kristen on Twitter at Impact Founder. Episode number 38 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week Women Inspiring Leadership Development, or simply WILD, track sponsor Recurly. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Honey, Matter, and Zayo. We're also supported by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio, and to KGNU Community Radio for recording gear and studio usage. Our intro music is by Echo Deck. Hear more at echodeck.com. That's ECCODEK. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. Reach me at joel@dojo4.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.